agenda for today is that we are having the presentation from the DTR, and we have Mr. Garth Strachan here, who is with DDG working on this matter in DTR, and he is presenting to us the new, do you call it iteration or iteration?
I'm an economist.
okay, not a linguist. The new iteration, the new iteration of the Industrial Policy Action Plan. We give our appreciation to the department for once again maintaining the standard of making sure that we get the documentation well before the meeting. I'm still working on the agenda. The second item on the agenda will be for us to look at the apologies. We'll come back to that. The third item is, honourable members, we have two documents at the back of my package. The one is that we will talk about our committee oversight in the Saldanha district. We'll talk about that later on. And the final thing is that we will look at the report of the International Study Talk and what do we do with that. Those are the items that we wish to deal with in this meeting. Let me then come back on apologies. I have one written apology here, which is the apology from the Honorable Tikhale, indicating that she's indisposed. And she has given us this apology. So I would then say that I put that apology to you. Normally, we don't have problems in terms of the process of just accepting an apology when it is in writing. But, honorable members, I wanted to put the matter of Honorable Vauda before you again with a proposal. My proposal is that we request the EFF to the party that is representing here to again send us an apology for him, because we've had an apology that we used for the last term. But because we're starting a new term, I think it's only proper that you don't submit an apology that lasts ad infinitum. Are you okay that we make that approach to the party to say, Honorable Masang, Savangu, should I do it in writing or are you going to take it up for that?
It is the appropriate to do it in writing.
Okay. So, Rebecca, you'll do that with the office formally. Okay? Thanks. That's the only apology that I have. We do know, this is not an apology, it's just for information. We do know that there's a meeting of, a combined meeting of the WIPs happening this morning. And that may explain the presence, the absence of Honorable Mtimunya and Honorable Mtede. But we don't have an apology, so they will be considered as absent. That's apologies. Can we then welcome Mr. Strachan? Thanks very much for making yourself available to report to this committee on the Industrial Policy Action Plan. I think that if we give you 45 minutes, would that suffice?
I'll fit into your program, Honorable Chair.
Can we give you 45 minutes then to lead us through that? You'll go through the complete presentation and then we will then allow members of the committee an opportunity to engage with you. I'm not sure if these mics are in fact working. If you can't hear me through your speakers, it means that they are not working. So I'll ask you, which is not a problem, Mr. Strachan, if you will just speak loudly.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Select Committee. Just one apology, Zuki Swa Makai, who is the could only get on a later flight, and I suspect she'll be a few minutes late. I'm trying to stick to the 45 minutes. Obviously, I'm assuming that honourable members have received both the short version, which we published greater numbers of copies of, which has the minister's foreword. It sets out some of the key themes, graphically represents some of the focus areas, and has a special section on the fourth industrial revolution, which is something that's going to have to occupy the government very considerably in the years to come. The second document is an in-depth analysis of the global and domestic economy, the sector reports, some case studies, and then the key action plan for each of the chief directorates, which are town-bound KAPs, to which we answer to the minister's monthly APAT meeting, and obviously to Parliament itself. So, Honourable Chairperson, you will correct me and assist me where you think I'm going into too much detail, but I'll try my very best then to stick to the 45 minutes and deal with the policy context, the core objectives, the transversal and sector focus areas, perhaps not deal with in any detail the highlights and achievements from the previous year, deal with the themes, the critical challenges, and then perhaps leave all the data which was provided on the global economy and the domestic economy, since that might be a bridge too far in terms of time. Chairperson, obviously the IPEP,
Mr. Spahn, can I interject?
Sure.
I just got the SMS now that indeed one member of Parliament was killed and the accident happened too far. We don't know who the member is, but true to our tradition, can I request that you just stand
members, obviously the Industrial Policy Action Plan, as everybody knows, is published once a year. It is framed by the National Industrial Policy Framework, which, by the way, next year will be 10 years, and there will have been 10 iterations of the IPEF, so we are planning a major review and impact assessment of the industrial policy. Probably everybody knows this, it's very much one of the key elements of the President's 9-point plan. It is very unashamedly linked to the National Development Plan and of course the new growth path. And then the budgeting is over the NTS and the NTSF. I think if one were to ask the question, what is the focus this year, it would be on minerals, education, agriculture and agriculture, energy, investment promotion and the oceans economy. Chairperson, the IPEP supports radical economic transformation. I know this is a much contested term from an economic perspective. It's about addressing the fundamental structural issues in the economy, and those structural issues in the economy are essentially the fact that our manufacturing sector has declined from 28% of GDP from the late 80s, and it's now probably 12.5% of GDP. Our services sectors are growing at twice the rate of the production sectors. Our agriculture and mining sectors across economic indicators, exploration, investment, output, employment, exports are in a certain degree of trouble. Since we prepared this presentation, which was presented to the Portfolio Committee, South Africa has entered into a technical recession, therefore we would argue that notwithstanding those issues, the structural problems of the economy remain in place, and again point to the fact that unless we address the structural problems of the economy, we are unlikely to be able to address issues of employment, ownership and management and control, in so saying, to address issues of the key labor-intensive sectors and the integration of the primary manufacturing and service sectors of the economy. I think Chairperson, it's probably worth stating again that we are of the opinion that there are very few cases, if any, at any time in history, anywhere in the world, where a country has achieved sustainable economic development, which the World Bank describes as 7% plus GDP growth over 15 years, which has not been led by the manufacturing sector. And in this slide, as well as in the outlook itself, we set out why the manufacturing sector is absolutely critical to the fortunes of our economy and economic growth trajectory, and why, notwithstanding certain high-achieving sectors, our manufacturing sector is under stress. It is we are going through, in keeping with many middle-income economies such as ours, we are going through a process of what some development economists call premature deindustrialization, with very significant outcomes for our economic trajectory. So the IFAD core objectives would be to diversify the economy and provide strong support for value-added manufacturing. It's a model focused on radical economic transformation and social inclusion. It's a model which builds or emphasizes the necessity for regional investment, trade and integration, especially in SACU and the SADC countries, which I'll speak to a little bit later in relation to exports. It's a model that emphasizes the importance of research and development, and honorable members would have noticed that for this this year, for the first time, was also included a chapter forward by the Honourable Minister of Science and Technology, Minister Naledi Pandor, and obviously there is a separate chapter on research, innovation and technology, and we've also dedicated a specific section to the Fourth Industrial Revolution. We're not convinced we might call it the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Some people think it's the Fifth Industrial Revolution. And we are perhaps erring on the side of calling it the New Industrial Revolution. And I'll speak to that in a little while. And in fact, yeah, Chair, we call it the Fourth Industrial Revolution, and I'm not sure at all that that is the correct terminology, but that's something for economic debate. Chairperson, I suppose this would get us to the heart of the IPEF, and Chief Director Nakaya is around. Chairperson, the IPEF is divided into transversal themes and sectors, and then specific sectors like autos, clothing and textiles, and so on and so forth. And we set out here graphically what these policy tools are, and bear in mind that the National Treasury is responsible for the triple PFA and the regulations of the triple PFA, and the DCI is responsible for designations in particular. We have designated somewhere in the region of 28 sectors, products, subsectors for local procurement, and obviously in circumstances where domestic demand, because of the contraction of the economy, issues of sentiment and confidence, domestic demand, including consumer demand, is low, and therefore raising aggregate domestic demand, including public sector demand, is important, and the DCI has in particular the designation lever. Bear in mind that the Competitive Supplier Development Program is not a DCI lever. It falls under the Department of Public Enterprises and the SOCs. And please bear in mind, or be reminded of, the fact that under the WTO, South Africa, well, most countries who are members, if not all, are prohibited from passing legislation which would provide for the private sector to have to procure locally. In fact, India have been taken to the WTO and lost in relation to the localization requirements of their renewable energy independent power producer program. We don't think that the way ours is designed will open us up to that kind of action, but nevertheless, it needs to be said that that is a very important factor. I should say, Chairperson, that we have also worked very strenuously, because private sector procurement has to be driven by what I would call a national campaign to procure locally. We spend a lot of time revamping Proudly South Africa, the board, it has a new CEO, and we are embarking on a national Buy Back South Africa campaign, attracting companies back to proudly South Africa. Chairperson, I think it would be safe to argue that the designation and procurement program has had mixed successes. Under the National Treasury, certain parts of it, certain parts of the designation, and the clothing and textile sector would probably be one of the best examples. We secured close to 100% local procurement at a national level. At provincial levels, at SOE levels, at metro levels, there's certainly a lot of non-compliance with the prescripts of the PPPFA and the regulations. At a private sector level, there is also a good deal of lack of support. If we had large private sector companies, whether it was in health or construction or ICT or one of the other sectors committing to local procurement, we would be able to make a very significant contribution to the to raising aggregate demand. I think it's a matter of public record, and the Portfolio Committee has had one hearing on this matter and is due to have a further hearings on the matter, that the localization program under the Competitive Supplier Development Program in ESCOM and Transnet and other state-owned entities has perhaps had less optimal outcomes, and it is something that needs to be given considerable attention. Under the procurement banner, of course, sits the National Industrial Procurement Program, where any company which exports into South Africa in the form of a public procurement tender above $10 million attracts offset, and I think we've had a very mixed results, but some very excellent results as well. The committee might be interested to hear at the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, using an offset from Siemens, we've established a cloud computing capability, big data capability, which can assist 8,000 medium and small manufacturing companies with access to big data. The Technology Localization Unit, which is funded by the DCI and also falls under the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, is working closely with large OEMs, including in the rail sector, and providing the necessary expertise and technology expertise in relation to being able to meet the onerous requirements for quality assurance standards, price, on-time delivery in the rail supply chain. Chairperson, that's the first big program on the IPAP. It's been there in all of the IPAPs. It's public procurement and a national campaign on localization. I would say that it has had mixed impact. And I'll deal with the challenges and problems later on in this presentation. The second big area of work is what we call building a system of incentives, industrial finance, and export support. It has received significant publicity, but the Black Industrialist Program, when I last heard, was supporting 45 Black Industrialists. The list of those Black Industrialists has been made public. The Minister and the DTI officials have been visiting all of those factories. Of course, the system also includes our automotive program, the industrial parks, the clusters, the 12-hour tax allowance, the agriculture development and enhancement program, and in fact, we should be adding to this slide the recently launched agro-processing incentive, which is an incentive to support labor-intensive value-adding agro-processing sectors, and the first window of that program has in fact just closed, in my understanding. I think it would be safe to say that our incentives have done exceptionally well in supporting slowing down the deindustrialization process in many instances, especially in steel, and in other instances is responsible for the fact that, for example, our clothing and textiles support, which isn't on this list, and our automotive incentives have been absolutely critical to building the competitiveness of those sectors. The third big area on the iPad is innovation and technology. We regard this area of work as absolutely critical. We work very closely with the Department of Science and Technology, both with respect to the research and development which is undertaken by institutions like the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. But it's not just about blue sky or greenfield research in key sectors where we wish to build competitive global capabilities. It's also about technology transfer and diffusion, commercializing locally developed technologies, and supporting research and development through institutions such as TIA at the Department of Science and Technology. Then, fourthly, Chairperson, this section of the work doesn't fall under industrial development, but is on the IPEP. It falls under a separate division in the DTI. It's the SEZ, I have a reasonable understanding of the SEZ, but a detailed knowledge would rest with other managers in the DTI, and this would include designation of new SEZs, building the institutional capacity of those SEZs, putting in place rapid infrastructure development, and a much stronger effort to pin down foreign direct investment in those SEZs. Chairperson, the fifth broad area of work is our developmental trade policy. The technical infrastructure institutions, which are the South African Bureau of Standards, the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications, the National Metrology Institute of South Africa, and the South African National Accreditation Organization, SANAC, are responsible for standards, compulsory specifications, accreditation and metrology, and those are very large institutions which require constant policy support and institutional and organizational support. Colleagues may be aware that the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications went through a period where the compulsory specifications and letters of authority for import had begun to fall behind, and we developed a rescue plan for that institution, which I have to say is going well. Then, of course, tariffs fall under ITEC, which, by the way, reports not to the DCR, but the Department of Economic Development, and tariff reform and policies are a continuous process. And as everybody knows, to give one example of that, this year there are new tariffs that are in place in steel, in the poultry sector, and there are safeguard measures to protect tariffs. Clearly, the independence of the International Trade Administration Commission is something which we protect studiously. Then, Chairperson, the next part of the work under developmental trade policy is customs. I think everybody knows that illegal imports, and by the way, illegal exports, constitute a clear and present danger to the economy, as they do to many developing economies, and we have to work very closely with Customs Division of SARS in relation to this work. Chairperson, as we speak, to turn to number 246, there is an African Industrialization Week happening in Johannesburg. All the member states of SACU and SADC are there. 450 private sector companies are in the room for the whole of the week talking about SADC trade, investment and regional integration. Later on this month there will be a SADC ministerial summit which will also deal with those issues of SACU and SADC industrialization. This includes, of course, a big export effort from South Africa, and I'll speak about that in a moment, but obviously trade and investment are critical issues. To turn to the specific focus areas which are set out in detail in the IFAB chair, the first one of which is automotive. Everybody is aware of the fact that we were undertaking an Automotive Master Plan 2020 process. I'm happy to say that that has been completed. The final report goes to Cabinet in the next few weeks, and once Cabinet has signed off on it, it will presumably be released by the Minister. Our auto sector is performing well under difficult circumstances. Demand for autos in Africa has fallen off a cliff. Our domestic automotive market is small. There is significant import penetration of our market. But our exports are doing well to Europe and North America. That would be, in particular, BMW and C-Class Mercedes-Benzes. There's absolutely no doubt that were it not for our autos program, we would not be able to sustain an automotive sector. The critical questions in automotives is to secure deeper levels of localization in the supply chain, and the new automotive master plan will achieve that. We're confident of that. And then obviously issues of empowerment are important. Global OEMs don't give away equity, and so empowerment has to be achieved in the supply chain, and the policy instruments will be shifting with the agreement of the OEMs in the direction of stronger localization. Clearly, the fact that General Motors left South Africa is a problem. We don't deny it. But I think it's important to recognize that that factory will be taken over by Isuzu. We are heavily involved in that transition process. We hope that no jobs will be lost. Isuzu globally clearly have a plan to not only assemble Buc-ee's in South Africa, but use this as an export platform for Buc-ee's, hopefully export into Middle East and Africa, along with the Ford Ranger and the Toyota Hilux. In addition to that, and lastly, obviously the BAIC, the Beijing Auto and Industrial Company investment in Mucha is also a highlight of this work set out in the ATA. Chairperson, the clothing, textile, leather and footwear sector, we are monitoring this sector very, very closely. We set out in the IPAS the fact that we are of the very firm view that this incentive, which is the second biggest sector-specific incentive on the Industrial Policy Action Plan, that it has had very significant success. The clusters in this sector are important, where we've brought textile companies together with apparel manufacturers and retailers, and in fact, Chairperson, we will be initiating a major review of an impact assessment of the clothing and textile incentive this year, which will be undertaken by a group of independent economists in close collaboration both with the DTI and the private sector. Chairperson, everybody is aware of the fact, thirdly, that our steel sector has been under very considerable stress. There's a global glut of steel. There's massive import penetration of steel products. China has more installed capacity to produce steel than total global demand. There is an interdepartmental and interministerial task team on steel. Everybody is aware of the fact that there is a monopoly producer, ArcelorMittal. ArcelorMittal, in the period under in question here, was given a 4.5 billion rand fine by the Competition Commission for abuse of market power, somewhere in the region of 2 billion of that is a commitment that they have given to invest in their plants and equipment. The central problem in our steel, primary steel production capabilities is that there was very little investment in the period 1990 to today. ArcelorMittal sweated the assets, they became uncompetitive. We have therefore insisted that there is also a pricing mechanism in return for tariffs being put on a range of steel products. ArcelorMittal have committed to not raising steel prices behind the tariff walls to prejudice downstream users. Working with the IBC, in addition to a pricing committee, there's a 1.5 billion rand steel fund which has been put in place for downstream steel manufacturers, steel intensive fabrication, and so on and so forth. Chairperson, in short, we've put an enormous amount of work into the steel sector. I wouldn't say it's out of the woods. It's still under significant stress, but you might be interested to know that the OECD Steel Committee, which is made up of the G20 and other countries in the OECD, it's a matter of public record that they cited South Africa as an exemplar with respect to the way in which they had dealt with the global steel crisis. Chairperson, We have significant support in relation to the National Tooling Initiative, the National Foundry Technology Network, and as we've already said, the Competitive Supply Development Program is done by the DPE, but we support this program very significantly. In some respects, the rail localization has been successful. In other respects, the private sector has complained about levels of demand from the Transnet programs, and as I said, the Portfolio Committee is seized with this matter. Chairperson, agro-processing is a big priority under RPEP. And I suspect, as everybody knows, we could spend a few hours talking about this issue, but our agricultural sector has a significant problem, which is the fact that it's based very largely on the production of sugar, wheat, and maize. And the production of high-value-added fruits, vegetables, nuts, products in high-value-added value chain is something that we have to give significant attention to. People refer to agro-processing as a labor-intensive sector, and that's true, but we have to recognize the fact that labor intensity doesn't always exist across the entire value chain. I often use this example, Chairperson. There are levels of very high levels of technology, even in agriculture. To export an orange to the Tokyo fruit market, it has to be the right size, the right color, the right ripeness, with no phytosanitary residues, packed in a sophisticated packaging, in a sophisticated cold chain, at the right price, to arrive at the Tokyo fruit market the day before it's sold. Now, that is labor intensity in primary agriculture, but to use that example, the machine that sorts the oranges isn't labor intensive, it's actually highly mechanized and technology intensive. And so when we look at agro-processing, we have to be careful not to say that it's all labor intensive. Labor intensity across all sectors sits in parts of the value chain. I think the same can be said for forestry, timber, paper, pulp and furniture. We are doing significant work in this sector. Chairperson, plastics is an area where we are giving a lot of attention. The South African plastic market is distorted mainly by the fact that we have a monopoly producer in the form of Sasol, who practice import parity pricing for polypropylene, propylene, and the derivatives of thereof, including ethylene. This distorts the plastic market. Countries which have state-of-the-art oil refineries and downstream plastics and chemicals industries are much better placed than South Africa. Both Natref and Safref were state-of-the-art in the 1960s. There has been no investment in primary petroleum refining since the 1960s. We are doing a big piece of work, which would be an impact assessment on whether South Africa can afford and needs a big oil refinery. But our chemical sector and our plastic sector are inhibited by this fact. In fact, I'm increasingly of the opinion that we don't really have a chemical sector. What we have is a chemicals processing sector where South African chemical companies import chemicals and mix them into things like washing powders that we use. But this is a very big piece of work that we are pleased with, and we've got big research projects, especially in chemicals. Our pharmaceutical sector and our cosmetic sector are doing relatively well. Companies like Aspen. This is not a labor-intensive sector because pharmaceutical production by its very nature is technology-intensive, but it's hugely strategically important for our economy because we are massive importers as South Africa and as the region of pharmaceuticals, and therefore we give this work a great deal of attention. And I would say with respect to cosmetics, in particular in the African market, there are very significant opportunities for cosmetics. Chairperson, our primary mineral beneficiation work, to turn to the next slide of sector focus areas, mindful of time, is very, very important. Without going into too much detail, let me demonstrate the following. South Africa is said to have 1 trillion reserves of metal, but that's a distorted piece of data. If you drill down, somewhere in the region of 60% of that is platinum group of metal. And the demand for platinum is catalytic converters, and it's possible that the demand for catalytic converters, my colleague from Labour will be interested to hear this, is with the massive expansion of electric vehicles, demand for platinum might decrease very significantly. We don't know. There's a technology race. Then, of course, there is demand for platinum in relation to jewelry. But we are putting a huge amount of work into fuel cells. The committee knows that we supported the fuel cell power generation plant at the Chamber of Mines. There is prototypes operating in mines for underground mining equipment, as well as prototypes for static fuel cell generation. And especially because our platinum mining industry is absolutely important. Investments, research and development, support for the downstream mining sector is hugely important, and especially in the platinum sector. Arising out of the mining Pakisa, one of I think it's a very big achievement. South Africa used to have a state-of-the-art, in fact, biggest in the world, pre-1994, Chamber of Mines Research Organization. It was closed down. We've reopened it with the Department of Science and Technology and all the mining companies in the room as well. Our upstream mining and the downstream beneficiation is achieving very significant attention. Then our green industries chief directorate is working particularly on 2 very important pieces of work. One is the fact that we have to ensure that carbon mitigation, energy efficiency, waste management becomes a significant principle and theme for all of our industrial sectors, not just renewables. And as part of that work, there is a very significant piece of work happening on smart grid application for South Africa working especially with municipalities. I won't deal with business process services, it's a well-known sector. Water and sanitation, Chairperson, for the first time this year, we put a special section on water and sanitation. As everybody knows, this is a very big problem of water scarcity, water recycling and sanitation in South Africa. Many of our municipalities are in considerable distress in relation to sanitation. I think very often there might be what could be referred to as the dictatorship of the engineers, who suggest very expensive solutions that municipalities can't afford, and they're expensive to buy and expensive to maintain. We've got a particular focus on local solutions which are more appropriate for our particular conditions, and we are working very closely with the Water Research Council to pursue industrial opportunities in relation to water and sanitation. Chairperson, Marine Manufacturing and Associated Services falls, in fact, under my colleague Suki Swanapai. I think we've done relatively well. We designated both for local procurement, the Transnet Ports Authority, and other government departments have by and large honored those commitments to localization. We've made absolutely sure that we don't allow any deviations in the marine sector. I think it would be safe to say that we've gone a long way to rebuilding our marine manufacturing. The critical issue now is how do we take it to another level, which I think can be said of a lot of industrial policy, some of them successful, but how do we have a higher impact marine manufacturing program? Aerospace and defense, Chairperson, maybe the best way of illustrating our capabilities here is that Aerosuit and Danel have global world-class manufacturing capabilities. Danel and Aerosuit provide components both to Boeing and to Airbus, and the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research is putting in place the world's largest additive manufacturing titanium capability, and both Boeing and Airbus are talking to the CSIR and Aerosuit and Danel, and of course the DTI is in the room in relation to scaling up our entry into those supply chains. And then of course everybody knows that Paramount and Aerosuit now are producing the Arleck light reconnaissance aircraft. Electrotechnical and white goods is also similarly subject of considerable support. Everybody knows that Samsung and Hisense have now invested in South Africa. Our domestic market is relatively small. The critical question is how to get those companies to begin to use South Africa as an export hub for the rest of the continent. Chairperson, in the interest of time, I'm not going to go through the achievement highlights with your permission. They all set out their sector by sector. I've referred to some of them, in the interest of time, I'm going to move on to the next theme, which is the key theme. And in fact, I can be quite brief here. The first theme is radical economic transformation. So the first theme which infuses the IPEP is radical economic transformation, ownership, management, control, empowerment, especially in labor intensive sectors. We think there's a great deal more to be done. This division doesn't deal with the BE code, but we think that there is significant progress. Then, Chairperson, there is a great deal of work going on which refers to the necessity to deal with bottlenecks, regulatory bottlenecks. We've established a one-stop shop in the DTI and to deal with agencies, SOEs, departments. I think it would be safe to say that the regulatory burden, cutting red tape, which is theme three, is something which remains a very, very serious problem. And the red tape is not just at a national level, it's at a provincial level, and it's at a local government level as well. And I know the Department of Public DPME, Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in the Presidency, is also very significantly involved here. Then, Chairperson, the issue of localization and raising aggregate demand, number four, number five, labor intensity in key value chains, clothing, agro-processing, component manufacturing, and so forth. A stepped-up export effort, Chairperson, I think it's a matter of public record that our export effort needs a great deal of more work. Our exports to our traditional trading partners, North America and Europe, have taken a significant knock. Our exports to Africa have somewhat offset that knock, but I think we need to be very careful. Those exports, on the one hand, are driven by retail penetration into Africa and the pull effect of retailers in Africa. Secondly, autos are doing very well, but demand from Africa has fallen through the floor. Our chemicals exports are doing well, but that's driven by and large by Sasol, and the data gets perverted, if you will, because it's affected by re-importing. We are importing chemicals, mixing them and processing them and re-exporting them again. And then, Chairperson, transport equipment, rail, vehicles, mining capital equipment is also doing well. But the basket of exports, the number of exporting companies, the destination of our exports is suboptimal, and we have to raise our game significantly there. And then, Chair, as I said, a national buyback campaign. We also, of course, and this doesn't fall under the DTI and falls under EBD, the barriers to entry in critical value chains are still very high, and honourable members have noticed, of course, that the Competition Commission is very active, including with respect to an investigation into retail. Then I've spoken about the system of incentives and industrial financing is the ninth big area. And then the fourth industrial revolution, Chairperson. I think it's safe to say that by next year we will have massively scaled up this piece of work. If any of you have been to some of the latest state-of-the-art factories, you can go to the Rosslyn BMW body shop. I think there are four workers. The technology manufacturing of the future is going to be technology intensive, skills intensive. More jobs for highly skilled workers and many, many less jobs for low skilled workers. And unless we give attention to labor intensity in the primary agriculture sector of the economy, in particular, and parts of the value chain, I think we're going to be facing a very, very uphill battle. The fourth industrial revolution is not something that should occupy the DCR. It has to occupy the whole of government. Chairperson, the illegal economy is something that is very scary. Honourable colleagues know that to go to one of these so-called Chinese emporiums, and I'm using the word in inverted commas to avoid any suggestion of prejudice, you can get a very good idea of the extent to which illegal imports constitute a very serious threat to this economy. Beneficiation I've spoken to, and technology I've spoken to. Gas industrialization, we've done a very big piece of work on gas industrialization. We still think it's an area which should achieve significant support. Unfortunately, it's one of those areas that unless the DPI works very closely with the Department of Energy, ESCOM, where we get anchor demand for gas, a gas industrialization strategy is unlikely to be successful. And then, of course, the green industry. So, Chairperson, I've run out of time. The key challenges, our economy is still resource dependent, mining and agriculture. Agriculture is picking up slightly after the drought of the previous season, but as everybody knows, the economy is in a technical recession. Mining and agriculture, when they are in contraction, the knock-on effect for manufacturing and services are very significant. Our mining sector is in a very significant, across all economic indicators, exploration, investment, employment, output, exports, is in a great deal of distress. The financialization of the economy, I've already spoken about. Our fire sectors, our services sectors are doing very well. For example, and I'm not suggesting this is in itself a very big problem, 20% of our exports to Africa are tradable services, which tells you something about how our manufacturing value-added exports, there's a suboptimal outcome. The biggest problem of all, and I'm really sorry, Chair, this has been poorly captured, investment as a share of GDP has remained well below 25%. In fact, it's hovered somewhere around 20%. In order to grow the manufacturing sector, we would have to get investment by the private sector and the public sector in manufacturing up to somewhere in the region of 30% sustained investment. Everybody also knows that unemployment and inequality, which is race-based and gender-based, constitutes this massive problem, and it affects our ability to grow because domestic demand is so small. Clearly, there's a very, very big problem with skills shortages and mismatches. Chair, we did this presentation 2 months ago. I could write it today. I would be saying to you that the bullet point on the right-hand side of the column at the top of the page, the continuing effects of the Great Global Recession actually are receding. I think, in fact, global demand is picking up. Developing countries are showing much higher rates of growth. This may not be the case in sub-Saharan Africa as the extent it is in other locations, because we're still at the bottom of a commodity cycle, and African growth is largely driven by commodities, and so, you know, one has to nuance that in some detail. Chairperson, everybody knows that to turn to the third bullet point on the right-hand side, escalating electricity prices, especially where municipal premiums are added, high port and rail costs and inefficiencies, road transport externalities and costs and inefficiencies. The inefficiencies and costs of municipalities. You just have to drive around Ekurhuleni and see the state of the roads where there are manufacturing companies to understand that municipal infrastructure is creaking at the seams and constitutes a very real problem for the manufacturing sector. Policy uncertainty, policy misalignment, program misalignment is a major construct. As we speak, the fourth round of renewable energy independent power producers has not been connected to the national electricity grid. If you want to think of a really good worst market signal to send, that would probably be high up there. We are saying to the private sector, you can invest. We've created a institutional policy architecture for you to invest, but we've now gone back on our commitment to take your demand, your electricity supply, onto the national grid. Policy uncertainty, fragmentation in government, program misalignment is by far, and we say it unashamedly, the biggest constraint to the manufacturing sector. In addition to problems at municipalities, high administered prices, and associated rent seeking. High input costs from the private sector, I've spoken about one of the players, red tape and legislative and regulatory delays. Chairperson, in fact, this slide is really a repetition of what has already been said, and so with your permission, I'll skip that. Chairperson, I've taken 45 minutes. The global context we've provided four honourable members, both on the iPad and in this presentation, a lot of the detail on the global economy and the domestic economy. I suppose I would end off looking at some of this data on slide number 44. Most worrying of all is agriculture GDP as a percentage of South African GDP. The red line is going south. Agricultural employment is going south. Agricultural investment going south. Agricultural exports have kind of held their own, although there's a lot of volatility. Of course, relative to 2010 prices, you know, the blue line, it looks good, but as a percentage of South African exports, and in real and not nominal terms, it doesn't look so good. Mining GDP, there's the data as well, and I'm dealing with this because the knock-on effects for manufacturing are significant. Mining unemployment going south, it's stabilized, but now it's heading sharply south as well. Mining investment is picked up 2005 to 2010 and it's now going south. Mining exports at the height of the commodity boom did much less optimally than they should have done and are now going south as well. Manufacturing, of course, is the most alarming thing of all. Manufacturing as a percentage of GDP has fallen to somewhere in the region of 13%. Manufacturing employment falling. Manufacturing investment, as I said, major problem. Manufacturing exports as a percentage of South African exports, we've done reasonably well, mainly because of exports to Africa. But as I said, the basket of exports and the export performance overall is far from optimal. Chairperson, I'm going to stop there because I've run out of time. And clearly there's a lot of devil in all of this detail. We hope we've given honourable members a kind of overarching flavour of this year's APA. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Strachan. I like the way you consistently reminded us that you've given me 45 minutes. but I don't think that it was fair. Looking at the value and the quantity and quality of the information that you've given to us. Ms. Nafai, welcome. I don't know if you'd want the members to hear your voice as well. By adding something, or do you want us to proceed with the engagement?
No, we can proceed with the engagement.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, when I looked at the document, I recognized that there's lots of information in here. But maybe just to talk about the transversal component thereof, that we find that both the Department of Tourism that reports to this committee, as well as the Department of International Relations, are working on a number of the issues that forms part of the Industrial Policy Action Plan. And therefore, we need to look at all these things together, whereas there are some of these matters that goes beyond us. Comrade Mahwebo and myself were talking, I was doing the talking, as we're coming here, just on our oversight, and talking particularly about the Saldanha Bay and the IDZ there. And when you talk about the maritime component of IPEP, we are particularly interested to know how far are we as a country in terms of the shipbuilding project, for example, at Saldanha. And we are doing our oversight there within 2 weeks, where that's one area that we'd want to look at. But Honorable Faber would remember when we went to Kudusport in Pretoria and we looked at the locomotives there. One of the concerns that we had was that where does all this metal for the manufacturing of the locomotives come from? And then we have recently read, and this is going to be a question, we've recently read that the South African Bureau of Standards has not been given that request or instruction by DTI to look at the localization of the manufacturing of locomotives at Kutuzpoort. Can you tell us where we are on that? Do we need to do anything as a select committee to ensure that indeed, because I remember how proudly our DG of DTI, Mr. October, was talking about the 75% localization. And where is the material for that locomotives being manufactured in Kutuzpoort coming from? Is that still South African? We have also, just by way of information to share with you, gone to Everest during our last oversight. And we have subsequently, Mr. Sachen, heard the good news that indeed the Everest plant has opened. But I'm raising that, honorable members, just to say that it won't be possible for us to exhaust our engagement with this presentation in the city. We may have to look at how do we go into a little bit more of the detail on certain other elements, like, for example, Everest. What's happening there now? If we look at Medupi and we look at the independent power producers and we look at what's happening in Eskom, what has been exposed recently in Eskom, it's not something that we'll be able to exhaust in this meeting. So I'm merely trying to say that I'm with you when we say there are elements here that we can't fully exhaust here. We may then, as members of the committee, want to decide how do we engage further with the DTI on the element of the work that it's doing. This, my final element of it, would be to say that there is this meeting of BRICS happening at the moment. I know the minister was there last week. I'm not sure if the minister is still there. Yes, he's still there because you have the ministerial meeting. But one of the things that came out there, and I'm a little bit subjectively involved in this, Honorable Chabangu, because you see, one of the big drivers of the Gauteng economy is the services sector. Now, Sharoz has given us this 87-page report from an international trade organization on South Africa's role in BRICS, that if you look at the amount of people that we are attracting to South Africa within the tourism industry, we are behind. And we have had the presentation from Tourism South Africa at our last sitting for the last quarter, but I also participated in one of the recent meetings. There are 150 million Chinese traveling. And if we look at the proportion of those travelers coming to South Africa, it's small. But when these Chinese travel, they don't just travel. They travel to look at business opportunities. So if they come to South Africa, they're going to look for more business opportunities. How are we positioned for that? So that's the tourism sector is an element that they put in this report on the services sector. But I wanted to conclude with the last one that relates to the transversal element of this report, which is the Department of Education. There are millions of Chinese, Russians and Indians, I'm particularly mentioning them because of BRICS, that are traveling to the developed countries like UK and the US for educational purposes. We as South Africans are not. If we therefore look at positioning ourselves within the fourth industrial revolution, where are we going to learn those technology skills? Where are we going to acquire the manufacturing expertise. Unless we look at how we rigorously do our oversight on education, particularly higher education, to make sure that happens. It means that we will also, as members of the NCOP, have to consider the way that we cooperate with other select committees. Because we can't write to the minister in Zimande and engage with him on that in the same way that the members of the Select Committee on Education might be able to engage in that. Mr. Strachan has made lots of reference to mining. I don't want to go there because there is a sector, but I want to conclude just on the automotive sector. Somebody has said to me, when sales in the automotive sector is good, it is a good sign for the economy. However, we are now in a situation where the recent report shows a growth in the automotive sector. But in the presentation that has been made to us, it has been explained to us that what's happening in the automotive sector, we could not go to BMW while we were there. Mr. Strachan's words were that if you look at one sector of the plant, I can't remember what the section was that he mentioned, but he said there's 4 staff members. Now, just last week I spoke to someone who is working at that BMW plant in Rosslyn. So we find that there is a growth in sales, but we find that technology is taking over rather than labor-intensive economic activity. And when we engage with this industrial policy action plan, let us just be mindful of that. Honourable members, can we agree that what we'll do is we'll take 3 questions, comments from every member, and we'll do it in 2 slots. So we'll take 3 members and then take another 3 members. It is now 11:30. I assume that we are all okay to do this for 30 minutes to 50 minutes so that we can deal with other matters on the agenda as well. I notice the Honorable Faber, who is from the Northern Cape. Then I notice the Honorable Chabangu, who is from the Free State. Do we have any other hands? Then we'll take the Honorable Chai, who's from the Eastern Cape. The Honorable Chai, Mitnabai, and Mr. Strachan, is also the chairperson of the Select Committee where we deal with the other economic clusters, like you mentioned public works, you mentioned EED, you mentioned transport, and those are all the 6 departments of government that we, the same members of this committee, are also working on in that select committee that the Honourable Chai is chairing. So can we tick off, Honourable Faber, please? Don't worry about the mics. Let's just raise our voices.
Okay. This one is working again, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Chair, yes, I think we've learned a lot when we went to Singapore and Malaysia. And I think what we saw there was that so much, not manufacturing, but in the services sector, is where their economy is actually having a huge boost. Because they don't have mining, etc. But they are still growing enormously. And I think education is one of the key elements in specific sectors where people must be educated to be able to work in those sectors. So I think this is maybe what we must also start looking at. Mining and steel and gold and everything is getting depleted after a while. And we must, before we get to that situation, already start to look at ulterior products to let everything grow or our economy grow. Then when we look at the steel industry,
It was not just when we went to IFELT Steel or the old IFELT Steel the other day that we saw this problem of imported steel, subsidized steel coming in here that is actually killing our steel industry. It was even before that, when we went to Kucha, when we were looking at those wind towers that was put up. And one of the members, Honorable Launt, and I think it was Honorable Gerard Ntebe, was walking with me, and my eye caught that one of these huge round rings had a South Korean badge on. And I asked this manufacturer, but why are you not getting steel from South Africa? Because in my province, the Northern Cape province, we've got Kumba and iron ore. And obviously we have to get the melting places in so that we can actually manufacture our own steel. I think this is the one thing we are trying to export raw products, and we know the Chinese don't want it because it's dirty, etc., etc. The problem that I see at the moment was that this gentleman told us that he cannot get the raw product delivered to him. He cannot, before even manufacturing this product, at the same price that he can import the complete product. The complete imported product for him is cheaper than getting a raw product, then he must all manufacture, etc., etc. Now, I asked how this was possible, and it was actually quite easy. These governments subsidize their own steel industry by exporting more and more, and actually, like, in a way, dumping steel all over the world. Now, the problem that I do have, and I understand, yes, trade and industry and Minister Davis, they did now put in an extra percentage on imports to somehow protect our steel industry. But you know what upsets me the most is when we go to these big power plants that's been set up, which uses an extraordinary amount of steel, they're getting steel from where? China, not from South Africa. And we're asking ourselves, why don't we create jobs in the steel industry when our own industry are not protected by our own government? And this, I believe, is a problem. I do also believe that IFELT Steel, apparently, when they were on the roll making lots of money, those years, when the steel industry was a roaring business, they did not reinvest in their own business. We do understand that. But I also want to know, is there no type of mechanism that DTI can put in, that when business are going well, that an X amount of that profit, I know it's private industry, but that can be almost like reinvested into that industry. So that it must be type of a norm that you cannot just, when it's going well, take 80% profit and, you know, jump out when it's time to jump out, and then government must come and do bailouts again. Is there no way that DTI can somehow say that, listen here, there's certain percentage that has to go back into developing the steel manufacturing divisions? I just want to know about that, so that we secure that in future, that we don't go the same path, because government can help out now, and we can say, wow, we've created 1,000 jobs again. So the next owners go and get their money out, and we're in the same boat. So I wonder if there's some type of structure on that. I think really the whole thing is about education again. I think, Chairperson, you were talking about it. I've been in Poland now for a small while again in this last month. And the services sector is, you know, they are just jumping out of bounds. They're doing so well. And Poland, as I say again, one of two countries that's having deflation in the last 5 years. And I really do believe we must go and learn from how are they doing it. And I've asked these questions over and over. I spoke to one of the politicians there, and he told me again, education and the type of education. And I think maybe we must look at that. That is just the input from my side. Thanks for the presentation. I know it's quite a bulky presentation.
Thank you. Do you want to come on more? Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start this by apologizing for what you have said. I've got Paul that wanted to know as to whether we are all aware, because one of My third question would be with regard to automotive. Is it doing well? It's doing well, but under a difficult circumstance. What about the rail? Is it also doing well? If yes, I would like you to give a proof with regard to the latest news that the sector has even got change that would fit in our railway. South African metal factories like Tisco are doing well under China's circumstances of the because preference is given to China, which produces less quality metal compared to that which is produced by our own South Africa. This gradually is leading to the closing of metal factories in South Africa, and like the one that I mentioned was really unbelievable. The presenter has alluded to the fact that the entities have less optimal outcomes. I would like to know what causes this and what are your plans to curb and strike this malpractice, which also leads to job losses in the South African sector. And finally, with water sanitation, you mentioned that there is scarcity of water, especially in rural areas. When are you going to help the municipality with regard to this? For an example, where I come from in Free State, there is a big dam that is called a self-contained. But the people that are living there do not get water. They get water through to you. And this big dam is supplying Gauteng with water every month. And the rest people deal with our water.
Thank you. What about that? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was not there when they filled up there. I said what the president said, but I didn't know what. But I find the presentation on the it doesn't break down the issues that are highlighted under this transversal focus. It is that the public procurement increase in the area under that particular thing without breaking down what is that the IOC. So I find that there's more of the problem from the PPP than what is the contained in the question. When I was looking at the previous particular look at the objective, I see this one, the one that is missing now, the one that focuses on supporting labor as long as it's as long as it's needed. For some reason, it's more of a day. You know, when I'm not famous for the time, but the objective, I know it's still a thing, something that is just other issue I wanted to make was the difficulty referring to this issue of the current blockage, but I've heard this pointed for a number of years, structural challenge to the economy. And I hope that government should be doing that issue. That is the top of that. Should come up with the policy that are going to address those structural challenges, other than also keeping them. But also, another issue that the department is repeating is that of policy uncertainty. Again, government is supposed to be addressing those, because especially issues that are going to misalign the program of department and entities. And currently, government is looking at issues, and those issues should be discussed in the short meeting for the first time. It means everything. In fact, twice a year, the first one will be around 3 months, and the second one will be July, August. So those things should be coming up. But also we have a department of the monitoring and evaluation. If there are challenges as a result of the health department with the program that are misaligned, those issues should be addressed at the level of public. Similarly, with regard to the issue that the individual was also referring to, I was at the portfolio committee of trade and industry. When he invited the arranging the body of trade to represent the APC, sometimes this year, arranged the same point that where the trade and industry invited the Department of the Transport Public Enterprises, Arrange Plaza, and Transport, on this issue of the NDC, to find they continue to buy. Companies outside South Africa, killing the industry in South Africa. But I'm saying that those issues are issues that are supposed to be dealt with because of the government, but also the department that is supposed to be monitoring and evaluating. It's supposed to be monitoring those kind of things. We were supposed actually to be dealing with that department together with other departments that are in the government cluster tomorrow. So we'll be following that particular especially in a top locality with anything buying outside of the company management side particular trust. So I just wanted to bring the issue.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sahib, before you come in, let me just make use of the opportunity, Honorable Khair, because you raised this thing about the transversal areas, to say that what we have, there's three documents. It's the summary, it's the presentation that was made to us, and then there is this book. I wanted to make sure that every member of this committee indeed have a copy or received a copy of the book here. Is there, other than Honorable Khair, you don't have a copy of that here. Who distributed the book?
I don't know.
Oh, now they get two. Because, oh, okay, yes, they are fine. That's okay, okay, so we all have it now. Right, so the detail that you are raising in your first question is hopefully addressed in the I've not read it, and that's the only reason why I say okay. Please proceed.
And thanks. In fact, to start, the detail on the public procurement is on page 40 of the RPEP, and it's spelled out in considerable detail all the designated sectors, subsectors, products, the outcomes, the problems, the new action plan, and so on and so forth. And the same goes for labor. In fact, even on the presentation, we make the point that there's a very strong focus on labor intensity in key sectors of the productive economy. And I think that theme cuts through most of the sectors. Chairperson, my colleague Mzukiswa Mapai will add where I perhaps leave anything out. With respect to shipbuilding, I think we must be careful. If we think that we can compete with China and Korea in big shipbuilding, we make a mistake. There's a global glut of ships. Historical producers like Scotland, that were the biggest producers in the world, don't make any ships anymore. We've got niche capabilities in recreational multi-hull boats. I mean, the best one is not very far from here, by the way, Robertson and Kane. We can make tugboats, we can make working boats, we can make shore-to-ship, shore-to-rig boats, and so on and so forth. We must build that capability, but it's niche shipbuilding. And it's about servicing rigs. And so Dana is essentially a hub to service West Coast oil and gas with, you know, pumps, transformers, pipes, chemicals, everything like that. I'm saying this, Chairperson, because I think we must be careful not to raise expectations that we're going to become a big shipbuilder. I don't think it's true. Although there are companies that are doing very well and are benefiting significantly from the designation. And Danelle, by the way, has now established Danelle Marine, and they're going to be working out of Simonstown Harbour. And so the critical question is how to get a higher impact. And so it's really good news that you are going to sell down. Chairperson, the localization. If state-owned entities and companies and government departments and provinces and municipalities want to break the law, they will. But until such time as we get state-owned companies, municipalities, provinces, departments committing to localization because they understand that to buy local is to create jobs and wealth in South Africa, you can pass the best laws in the world, you probably won't have sufficient compliance. Although I would say from the perspective of the DCR, and it's not my call, that those institutions which are tasked with securing compliance and bringing those entities to book which haven't followed the law, and the law is very clear. If a product is designated for local procurement, you can't import. Then those institutions must be brought to book. It's not the responsibility of the DCR, but we would say that a lack of localization in energy, in transport, in rail, in oil and gas, it's a major, major problem. And if you don't secure compliance, policy alignment and program alignment, frankly speaking, you'll never industrialize. You can forget it. The strongest instrument we have, as all successful industrializers have demonstrated, is local procurement. And if there's simply flagrant non-compliance across the board, the outcomes will be suboptimal. And the outcomes are suboptimal. It's just the reality. There's a big problem also. The triple PFA is not the responsibility of the DTI, it's the responsibility of the National Treasury. There's a flaw in the triple PFA because who pays for the verification? Is it the procuring entity, or is it the supplier? Either way, the
public purse will pick up the cost, because if it's the supplier, they will build the cost of verification into their tender bid. Or if it's on the demand side, the procuring entity would have to pay for it. There is no money for the SADs to do verification, and SADs have complained about this, and it's been a constant problem between the DTI and the National Treasury. Although we have also said to SADs, be very careful of a situation where you see that verification becomes not simply a cost recovery exercise, but a profit generating exercise, and that you know, verification should be considered as a public instrument. Cost should be recovered, but that it can't be so exorbitant that the verification doesn't get done. So the answer to the question is, there's a very big problem with respect to verification. There's no policy coherence, program alignment, and there's willful, widespread non-compliance of procurement. Fact. With respect to EVRAS, it falls under the IDC and EDD. We are happy that part of EVRAS has been reopened. I think EVRAS is a very good example of the fact that not all foreign direct investment is, you know, milk and honey. They didn't reinvest, they sweated the assets, the environmental degradation, in my understanding, is a 1.5 billion rand contingent liability to the Department of Environmental Affairs. My understanding is that there are also other very significant liabilities, including to the fiscus, in relation to EVRAS. The overriding lesson is, where there is foreign investment, which is the takeover of a South African manufacturing plant, keep your eyes very wide open for foreign investors who come in, perhaps with ill intent, to sweat the assets and degrade your industrial capability. The automotive sector was asked by a couple of more than one honourable member. Our automotive sector is doing well. There's no question of it. It's a very small market. Our opportunities for export are difficult. We have deep water export opportunities. We're exporting across the high seas to the US and Europe. The African market is characterized by the fact that African countries, with due respect, have a policy problem. They are importing second-hand vehicles from North America, from Europe, and from Japan. It could be argued that consumers in those countries benefits because a nearly new vehicle at a low cost is available to consumers. By the way, OECD countries have auto policies which provide rebates to consumers to return their nearly new vehicle and buy a new vehicle, which raises aggregate demand, and that nearly new vehicle gets exported into Africa. But you are never going to have an automotive manufacturing or even assembly capabilities in Africa if you import second-hand vehicles from developed countries. And so
We are working very closely with Nigeria, we're even working with Kenya and other countries. How do we build complementarity to ensure that we can create an African auto industry? And that's a very, very difficult and long-term task. We're working closely with Nissan, Toyota and other OEMs to try and build an African auto market. I'm giving you a summary. The answer to your question posed by Honorable Faber, I'm not convinced by your arguments, by the way. Singapore is a highly industrialized economy, which is not to suggest that services aren't important. Services, some services are tradable, in other words, you can export them, and services are very often labor intensive, and services provide important inputs for mining, agriculture, and manufacturing. But there's no country anywhere at any time which has achieved sustainable development on the back of services. Because if you don't have primary production and manufacturing, what are you servicing? You're servicing households, you're servicing banks. The services sector, to be sustainable in the long term, has to, we argue, have a foundation of manufacturing and production. In fact, Singapore is a big boat shipbuilder and rig builder. Rigs from Angola and the DRC get towed past Cape Town to Singapore. They're massive manufacturers of chemicals, steel products, oil and gas products. Singapore is a highly industrialized state. Please, that's a very important consideration. With respect to steel imports, there is dumping, no question, which is why we've raised tariffs and why we've got a safeguard measure with respect to steel. But the view of the DTI, and I think the minister, is that if you lose your primary steel production capabilities, which are vested mainly in ArcelorMittal, but of course there are other mini mills, then you would be making a very big mistake, because when the steel crisis has lifted, even though we are one of the biggest producers of iron ore, if we had no steel production capability, we would be price takers when the cycle is lifted. And by the way, South African ports would not be able to cope with the volume of steel which is required by the SADC economy if we lost our primary steel production capability. So the question then is, how do you keep your primary steel production capability, work with AMSA to ensure that they raise their competitiveness, they reinvest in new plant and equipment, they continue to export, they don't practice import parity pricing, which hurts the downstream users, and how do you support the downstream users at the same time, which is why we've put in place this $1.5 billion IDC fund for the downstream users. Chairperson, as the Honorable Chabangu's question, I think the problem with our auto sector is, notwithstanding the successes, notwithstanding the problem that we've got a small market, we've got import penetration, low localization, suboptimal levels of empowerment in the supply chain, we mustn't make the idea of some perfect idea the enemy of the good. And our auto sector is actually doing well under very difficult circumstances. But we recognize that there are problems, which is why we've done the automotive master plan 2020. As I say, I'm not able to talk to it in detail, but I can say that we are going to secure a conditionalities in this incentives which will secure higher levels of localization, therefore higher levels of job creation in the supply chain and higher levels of black economic empowerment. No policy instrument should remain static. And so when the MIDP came in 1996, I think it was, every 3 years it's been reviewed, it's been amended. We even amended the APDP last year, and hopefully towards the end of the year or early next year, the minister will announce further amendments to the APDP. The same can be said for clothing and textiles. Chairperson, we are providing incentives to clothing companies. The majority of them have invested in new plant and equipment, retained and increased the labor, raised their competitiveness and recaptured domestic market share. Many of them are even exporting. In the leather sector, 23 new factories were opened in the last 1.5 years, and we created 8,000 jobs in the leather sector. But even that, notwithstanding those achievements, we understand that there are a percentage of clothing companies that haven't raised their game. They take their incentives, they haven't invested in new plants and equipment, they haven't taken on more staff, they haven't raised their competitiveness, and we are talking to them and we are reviewing the incentives, and the government, the minister and the cabinet will have to consider, does this incentive remain in place forever, even for companies that don't raise their competitiveness? I think industrial strategy would tell you that you have to not pick the winners, but you have to support the winners when they reveal themselves.
You have 7 minutes.
The DTI does not have responsibility for the municipalities, Honourable Chavangu, and so, but we would say that the triple-digit increases in electricity, which is reticulated by municipalities, the fact that municipalities are responsible for blackouts, where there is supply shortages and cutting of electricity, the fact that water is a major problem in some municipalities, the fact that the infrastructure problems of municipalities, we are simply pointing out that the problems in municipalities constitute a very big problem for industrial and economic growth. Not in all municipalities, but in many, many municipalities, this is now a major problem. And that department needs to take responsibility. With respect to rail, it's an open secret. The Portfolio Committee has dealt with it. The Portfolio Committee will be dealing with it going forward. We have presented to the Portfolio Committee, and we're happy to do so again, including to this committee, levels of localization in the Transnet and PRASA rail programs are suboptimal. Same goes for ESCOM. There is non-compliance in localization and local procurement. And if we think we can build a rail industry and support our steel industry where there is non-compliance, we're making a big mistake. I've answered, I hope, the question posed by the Honourable House. sir.
I'm looking at you, madam.
Oh, no.
Miss Navai, we wanted to give you an opportunity to ask me.
Thank you, Sir Sussan, but I think the DVC has covered most of the issues, but I just wanted to add on the issue of compliance when it comes to localization. Unfortunately for us, as a department, the PPPFA regulations, they give onus to the procuring entity to deal with the issue of non-compliance. We do not have, as a department, recourse when there is non-compliance. And the PPPFA states that a procuring, if in a case of non-compliance, the procuring entity can cancel or impose penalties, but that hasn't been the case. What we've done in the DCI was to engage the Auditor General. In order for the Auditor General, in cases where they have discovered non-compliance, they can declare that an irregular expenditure. They are taking on that work. They are trying to understand what this whole localization program entails and engaging the departments that have sectors that have been designated, also engaging our procurement unit within the DCI to ensure that at least, even though we do not have a mechanism as a department to enforce compliance, but we are engaging the Auditor General in order to ensure the procuring entities and the national departments can take the localization program more seriously than they are currently doing. On the issues of Honorable Khai, the breakdown of what DCI is looking at. If you look at I'll just point to a few areas. If you go to that the slide on the transversal area. I'll just pick on public procurement. Public procurement, there are three areas, anchors of public procurement that we are focusing on in this financial year. We are looking at rolling out designations, where we will continue designating more sectors on products for local procurement, where there is capacity and where we are looking to build our industrial capabilities. We will continue to deploy a strategic lever that we have as government at our disposal in order to ensure that we are building capabilities and the suppliers that we are building, they form part of the global value chain. And the third program that we are looking at is the Cooperative Supplier Development Program, which is a program under the Department of Public Enterprises, where the rail localization program it falls under your ESCOM and your Transnet. They are embarking on that program. So those are the three areas of focus that we are looking at. In terms of industrial financing and incentive schemes, we are rolling out the existing program. And as the DDC mentioned, in July, the minister launched the new agro-processing incentive program in this financial year, where the first window, I think, closed recently. If you look at SZ, we'll continue the process of designating the new SZ. We'll continue embarking on building institutional and capacity development, because this is a new program in South Africa. Hence, South Africa signed a memorandum of understanding with China, because China has an advanced SZ program. So on a yearly basis, we take officials on the capacity building to China for about 2 weeks. We take about 30 from the municipalities, from the provincial government, and from the national government. So I was just picking out just examples. On Saldanha Bay, if you would recall, Chairperson, Operation Pakisa identified Saldanha Bay as an oil and gas hub. The focus under the Operation Pakisa Pacific Plan is to establish a purpose-built oil and gas port infrastructure where Transnet. There was that announcement that was made, I think, 2014, where they were looking to invest about 9.2 billion then. But I must say that they have scaled down the projections. In 2015, they issued expressions of interest, where they were looking to have operators running, managing the port. But I must say the appetite has reached. There hasn't been appetite, and given the depressed oil gas, oil prices, so they also contributed to the lessening of interest in operating that. They are looking into revising the investment phase going forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
I wasn't going to give a last round, but I don't want to deny you. Just because of the time constraint, let's have your honourable lawn, but then just say that you also can we then agree that we will go on until 2:15? We can release that, but there's another meeting at the end of the one, so we won't conclude that after. Okay, Honourable Lund, you have the floor. Honourable Lund is from the Western Cape, but not the West Coast area. He's from the the Southern Cape area, but he's representing Western Cape. Honourable Lund.
Thank you, Chief. The one that sticks out, and I'll get to that one, is the growth or the lack of growth in exports to the rest of Africa. I heard what you said in terms of the second-hand vehicles that get imported, but that's not the only thing that we export. And Africa is a huge, untapped, or even if it's tapped already, a market that we are supposed to get our foot in the door ahead of many of our competitors. Now, I understand that Europe is a lot closer to the northern countries, but there's many, I think there's a big potential that we're not really tapping into, and it's, I think it was that second last slide where we showed increase in growth to two neighboring countries, I think it was Botswana and Namibia, and then one other that one other small increase, but be that as it may, I mean, what is being done to ensure that increases exponentially and that we use not just in the static region but also reach a bit further so that if we increase the exports, it should be able to translate into job creation even though we are going through a difficult period.
You know, the one, Honorable Lund?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much. Honorable Makwebo is from the Eastern Cape, not New York.
Thank you, President. My one of the sectoral, you know, focus areas you have mentioned is plastic, and you talked about recycling. Let's talk about that. I want to hear what is your plan on recycling, because recycling does not only, you know, help save our planet, but it could have financial spin-offs because we're dealing with poverty and neighborhood, high rate of unemployment. So this is the township and villages with that kind of technology today where there's this machine, reverse vending machine, that can store the plastic or the can, and then you can get
get the money now. So if people save plastic, then they can get money to buy bread and put food on their table. You know, it's even difficult to save. But I'm just mentioning the example, but I want you to unpack this recycling. How do you plan to deal with that? And, you know, so that people can benefit from that. And, that's my question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. I'm just looking for the data on our exports. In fact, our exports to Africa are... Yeah. Now, where we do well, by the way, is exports to study. Automotive, agro-processing products pulled by the retail expansion, some mining capital equipment. Some mining equipment to Zambia, and then household chemicals, explosives for mines. But most of it is SADC. We're not doing very well. I think we must be a little bit careful about overestimating demand in Africa. The Africa rising story, frankly speaking, is still rising. And so aggregate demand in Africa is on the increase, but actually it's very low. The middle class in Africa is low, it's small, and demand is primarily for mining equipment, chemicals, agro-processing, fast-moving consumable retail, and so on and so forth. Bear in mind that there are massive constraints. It is cheaper to export a piece of mining capital equipment from a Brazilian East Coast port to Angola or the DRC or Liberia than it is to export it from a South African port, which is a small coaster which goes up the coast. The massive infrastructure problems in relation to rail and road for exports going north. There are massive non-tariff barriers at the land ports in Zimbabwe, Botswana, Zambia, leave aside once you get to Angola and the DRC. There is, frankly, no rail capabilities other than very limited export capabilities through Zambia. So this idea that we enjoy a comparative geographic locational advantage is only partially true. In fact, deep water exports, given the massive technological improvements in container ships, means that some exporting countries are in a better position than us to export to Africa. Non-tariff barriers in Africa are a significant constraint, including in the east coast of Africa. We hear continuously that from electrotechnical manufacturers, TVs, white goods, fridges, stoves, they meet with massive non-technical, non-tariff barriers on the east coast ports. So the Africa story is a complex story. I think we should, with due respect, avoid over-exaggerating the potential. The potential in SADC, I would say, is very big. And, you know, we're very heartened by the fact that as we speak, there are 450 companies in the Africa, SADC Africa Industrial Week, which is meeting now at the moment, and there's huge potential. There's huge potential in
key sectors in rail exports, in oil and gas, the, you know, it is suggested that the procurement spend for the Temani Northern Mozambique gas field is somewhere in the region of $2 billion a year. Are South African companies geared up to supply? Probably not. Do we face incredibly strong competition from exporters from China, India, Brazil, Europe? Yes, we do. And so we've got to look at niche export areas, agro-processing, mining capital equipment, boat building, chemicals would be some of the areas where we're paying particular attention to. And, you know, I suppose if we were to be self-critical about the DTI, we've got to lift our game with respect to the export efforts in Africa. There's no question about it. But it's easier said than done. An export promotion effort requires very, very considerable effort, a close collaborative effort with private sector companies. And one of the mistakes we make is that we can get SMEs to export. Actually, exporters are large industrial companies, and I'm not suggesting that we mustn't open the door for new entrants to become exporters, but the degree of sophistication required to export, especially high value added manufacturing products. All the global experience says that this is done by very large industrial companies. I think we've also largely, Chairperson, got to raise our game in relation to the way we position South Africa as an export hub, and so that foreign direct investment is designed in such a way that we secure that investment on the basis of supply, not just to the domestic market, but to use South Africa as an export hub, which requires, frankly speaking, our infrastructure, whether it's rail, ports, electricity, municipal infrastructure, there needs to be a massive national effort to improve this. Because, in fact, I was at the BRICS Industrial Council last week, and there were 400 companies there, and when you meet the companies, they tell you infrastructure is a very big problem in South Africa. Of the type that we are talking about. And so I suppose I would end by saying one of the biggest mistakes that we make is thinking that IPEP and the industrial effort is an effort of the DTI. It has to be an effort of all of government, with all of government pulling in the same effort for industrialization. And that may be our biggest problem. We see industrial policy as the responsibility of the DTR, but successful industrializers have recognized that every department must be focused on the industrial effort, every provincial government, every municipal government. And our industrial effort is characterized by a lack of policy coherence, massive fragmentation across government. It's a fact.
Thank you very much.
I'm becoming even more concerned about the veracity of the challenges that we have, because having participated in the WTO meeting that was held in Kenya, I think 2 years ago, and listening to our African counterparts in that meeting. I mean, where we had our own African meeting, and looking at where we stand on these things. I think Mr. Schachen made reference to South Africa's position on the continent. And a particular thing that stood out for me was where we are economically and where just our other members in SADC are, that we find that agriculture is a major opportunity, but also has major potential for those countries. They aren't interested in buying our cars. They want cheaper tractors. They want cheaper seed. They want to be able to work the land. And how do we engage on that? I'm merely raising it, members, to say that the point that we started off with, to say that we can't conclude this conversation on industrial policy within one sitting. And I said that towards the end of the meeting, we will then decide how do we continue with it. But I'm worried that we may not have enough time now, and wanted to propose to you that what we do is we ask our management committee, the combined management committee, to look at this matter and to bring a proposal to us in our next meeting. Are you okay that we proceed in that way? Because I was going to make a proposal, but then it struck me, Mr. Strachan, that there's also the SADC thing that's happening now. And we need to have a conversation with each other on what is it that we are taking to SADC. What are we, as South Africa, wanting to get out of it? It's all there. But then also we have to look at that within the context also of SACU, and what is happening in SACU at the moment. And then to just conclude that our chairperson of the NCOP, Honorable Modise, recently participated in this Commonwealth Parliamentary Association meeting that was held in Nigeria. And one of the things that comes out of there, Honorable Faber, is your favorite one, about how do we link in terms of technology with our members of parliament in other parts of the continent. And it's shocking when we begin to engage in that type of conversation, because we have allowed, we blame departments outside, but we have also allowed in parliament some of the things here to deteriorate, that we can't use them in the fourth industrial revolution. And we need to look at all those type of things. So with your permission then, how we'll proceed in terms of taking the matter forward, we'll sit as the joint management committee and come with a proposal to you. It will most probably only be in September, because you know what our month of August looks like. Mr. Strachan.
Chair, I'm really sorry. I just omitted to answer the Honourable Makhoebu's question. Steel recycling with all the scrap metal, with all its problems, which is the subject of perhaps of another discussion, works relatively well. Paper recycling and glass recycling is a relatively mature sector. The plastics recycling, we are working very closely with Plastics South Africa, the industry association, on the plastics recycling is completely informal. I know in my own house, somebody comes and opens the wheelie bin and looks for the plastic. We've got to try and formalize it. We are working on a proposal. Unless or until the municipality gets involved in the effort to themselves support recycling into metal, ferrous and non-ferrous, glass, paper, plastic, we're probably still going to continue to have a problem, but municipalities
as everybody knows, are themselves under such fiscal stress that they can't give resources to this. But we do, as a country, need to begin to give it much more priority, because the circular economy is such that unless you recycle, you're going to fall behind. There's even technology now, to give you an example, where you can sweep the street and take the dust off the street, which contains very small amounts of platinum and palladium from the catalytic converters on the exhaust of your car. So, waste recycling is a sector of the future, and we need to raise our game much more significantly in this regard. I'm sorry, Honourable Mahoud, that's a summary. There's a long answer to the question as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The city of Yaoundé in Cameroon has had big problems with their plastics. Rivers were clogged, fish were dying, and we know that they have lots of trees growing in that area. And a sports soccer player has started working with the local municipality on recycling there. And I was excited when I looked at the documentary where they are taking the plastics and making plastic bricks out of it. And the municipality is now buying these plastic bricks. And when I looked at them, and you see the way that, you know, plastic brick is lighter than a mortar, cement brick. And they're using that, and it is a creative way of getting plastics out of the river. And if you've been to that city and you looked at the amount of water, I mean, it's right on the coast, so there's a lot of rivers from the mainland flowing there into the sea, and it has caused major devastation. So recycling is an exciting thing and something that we also need to talk to ourselves more about, particularly, as you know, when there is the wheelbarrow removals in your area, you see those young men and women with those trolleys full with material that the middle class consider as waste. And they are making money out of that. Now, there was a time in the Joburg Metro that we were saying Pick a Pay and some other supermarkets were going to provide them with the trolleys. It is much more friendly. Because you look at the trolleys that they're presently using. I mean, when I pass them Sunday mornings, I pray that these guys mustn't be bumped off the road. Because you can't see them. And we, in the discussion on recycling, need to look at those type of threats to the safety of people who are creating a cleaner environment as well. But thank you very much, Ngapai. Thank you very much, Mr. Strachan, for the effort. It was good listening to you. We are looking forward to bringing you back so that we can engage you further on the matters related to industrial policy, broadly speaking. And we have noticed with appreciation the busy schedule that you've had. Have you had the manufacturing in Daba already? I participated last year but couldn't make it this year. And then there's the missions that you, the minister has into certain parts of the continent. And now there's this important meeting that you're having with SADC, also the meeting with BRICS. And we wish you well. We are looking forward to having a time to give you an opportunity to also report to us on some of those other interventions. Thanks, Emmanuel.
Thank you.
Honourable members, can we go to the next item? If you will allow me, I didn't present it to you in the sequence that I want to. We have before us the program for the oversight. We have agreed, just to give context to that, that we're asking our researchers and the secretary to work on a program for us. We have the program before us now. The oversight is 14th to 18th of August. I have agreed with Honourable High that if the other committee don't meet, that we'll approve it here because it's the same member. Honourable members, we have here there before you. The date is the 14th to the 18th of August. We leave from Parliament at 2:30. We go to the hotel, which will be in Saldanha Bay. I don't know the name of the hotel yet, where we would be staying. Do you have the name? The Protea Hotel. Then at 6 o'clock that evening, we'll have a debriefing. Therefore, today we're just running fast through it. We'll have the briefing of the oversight. But then on the first day, we'll have a briefing by the West Coast District Municipality. Now, on the program that I have in my file, it says there the venue. If you look at 8 o'clock, the venue on some programs may say Mauritsburg. The municipal offices from Mauritsburg has been very accommodative. Mauritsburg is like 70-75 Ks from Saldanha. And they said no. They don't want us to travel that distance. They will come to Langebaan, which is 5-10 kilometers from our hotel, and they'll meet with us there in the local municipal offices. So the district municipality will come and brief us in the local municipality. Am I right? Right. At the Tusong Center in Langebaan. Sorry, not municipality. At the Tusong Center in Langebaan. Then the rest of the meeting will be held at the Tusong Center. I'm not going to go through the detail of the program, other than to say that on the second day, which is the third day, which is Wednesday, we will go to the IDZ, Industrial Development Zone, in Saldanha. We'll do a tour of the Industrial Development Zone, and that's what's going to take our time the whole morning. Now, I have particularly asked the researchers to look at this thing of the maritime industry and what's happening there in the ocean as an element of the IDZ as well. But we'll pick up when we get the briefing from the IDZ management where exactly they will take us in the IDZ. Then the Thursday, we will visit the wind farms in Darling and Oakfield, and then also go to the West Coast National Park. Now, Honorable Lawrence, I thought that I know the Western Cape. And then I said to Klupeka, I don't know about the national park there. But then I spoke to SA Tourism about it as well. They say, no, there's a very nice national park there. So we'll spend the afternoon in the national park. Because what we try to do, Honorable Members, is to get the different departments. So in the morning, we look at Department of Energy, in the afternoon, Department of Tourism. That's the only thing in the Department of Tourism that we will be participating in. Then on Friday, on our way back to Cape Town, we have to pass Atlantis, and we'll stop in Atlantis to visit the Special Economic Zone. And there I'm hoping that they would be able to take us to Hisense. In the IPEP earlier, reference has been made to Hisense, which is this new plant manufacturing televisions and other technology. I don't know exactly what Hisense is, but it's a major employment creator in the Atlantis area, and we'll stop there as well, and we'll see what other projects there are in that essay that they want to expose us to. And we leave then, we close at 12 o'clock. Honorable members, at 12 o'clock. Can I plead with you that we do not ask for permission to leave earlier, but that we stay there until 12? It's very embarrassing for us. It has happened at two occasions in KwaZulu-Natal and also in Pilansburg, where when we get to the end of the program, members leave, and then our hosts feel very offended that all the members are not there, because they have made preparations for us. Thank you very much. I'm not going to ask for acceptance of the program. It is work that has been done. I will, however, if there's very exciting additions that you want to make, to say to you, please feel free to either raise them now or to engage with me outside of the meeting so that we can, myself or Honorable Khai, so that we can look at still accommodating them. Honorable Chalango? Then Honorable Khai?
With regard to the transportation that you're going to make, I want to make a special claim that the officials should look for the cars that are good numbers, not anything in terms of the color. Maybe we're going to experience what has happened today again, because you still remember in the precinct we're using very dilapidated cars. I'm making a special claim.
Thank you very much. All right. By saying, you're saying we need vehicles that are safe. Roadworthy and safe. Honorable High?
I just wanted to find out the first thing. I'm just hearing the excitement, especially for me and the Honorable Marquis. We should finish at first, whether we'll be on time.
Between here, Honorable Lord, help us. What's the distance between here and Saldana?
Depending on the mist. It's winter, and it gets misty. So if there's mist, it can take 2.5 hours, and then it stays there. The speed over distance camera, so it should take you, fierce driving, about an hour, just over an hour.
Yeah. From there to Cape Town on to the airport, same distance. Same time.
Luckily, the N7 becomes just terrible, will connect to the N1 and then you go to the airport.
Change about an hour.
I would suggest you leave at least an hour and a half, preferably 2 hours to get there.
But from Atlantis, it's closer. So let's work on an hour, hour and a half, then you're absolutely safe. Okay. Honourable members, just the last matter then, which is the report on the study talk. Oh, sorry, we still have to deal with a minute. The report on the study talk. Are we ready to accept this report?
Yes.
Proposed? Honourable Mahuel. Seconded by Honourable Faber.
One thing that was a bit of a surprise to me today was the gentleman was saying to me, but no, they are green industry in Singapore. And I was thinking, wow,
there is more knowledge.
We were more into the small business development and how they were doing, but we really never on that whole tour got any insight on the rest. Even though we were at the harbour where they had this huge infrastructure, we were looking like that, gone looking through the glass and seeing how these ships are coming in and out, we understand for export they use. But in the industry of manufacturing and developing them to that, and it was said to us on this tour, that services were their driven driving the economy. That they were service driven economy and not so much. And so, as I said, My colleague next to me said as well, that's a new dream this morning when we had the...
You see, yeah, let's leave it at that. Because it will happen with most of our oversights.
Yeah.
If you talk to me, I will tell you about my clan. I won't tell you about the Mahwebu clan.
Yes.
And that's going to be the problem that we're going to have with our... How do we begin to put things together? Because I remember at one meeting... Remember that meeting where that young man was standing up the chair and standing there on the chair and talking? In Singapore.
Oh, yes.
Because he, that group of people were going to talk to us about the broader thing. But then they couldn't. I'll look at that presentation and so that I can give you something a bit more substantive. Because that's where they were going to go to. And then we sort of said that, no, we are not going to go into it. Because they could have kept us there for the whole day, as it has happened here with the iPad.
Because, you see, it doesn't give us the growth over here exactly, because our lessons learned.
Yeah.
Because we come here today, and on the knowledge base that I've got from reading through the report, and going through it, and what we've experienced, and then listening to what he said to us, like, involved, okay. You're almost out of your depth immediately because you don't have that information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's... I mean, you mentioned Poland as well, and we can talk about it. Because I've just been to Poland on an official visit, and I mean, the exposure that we've had in Poland has not been shared. I mean, I looked at the report as it was still in the drafting stage, and I was saying, there's lots of other things that we could add here, but we don't want to have a thesis.
Can that one on Poland as well? If you have a report on that, I would like to see it.
It's a chairperson's report. I don't think they don't write the reports. I just saw this morning that they viewed me. They took photos there. I just received a disc with the photos this morning. I'm not. Now, when did we go to Poland? Last year. I'm only receiving the photos today, after I backed on them. So the report, you look at the reports from the PGIR, you part of it, of part. Did you see the number of reports? So if we have that report, the report must go to PGIR, get approved there before it comes to us. No, that report is not in the PGIR. But I look at all the other reports in the PGIR. I just looked at the report last night, from the Department of International Relations, the Portfolio Committee on International Relations.
Yeah.
They have something like 5 reports, all of them very interesting, on Palestine, Sahrawi, our interventions in Turkey. I haven't seen anything on South Sudan, but these are all very important matters for us. As members of this committee. It was emailed to all of us.
Just to all of you who might be a pilot fan, I see you don't have to resign. I am. just to give you some insight. Sorry, how long did he last?
Before we go there, can we go to the minutes of the last meeting? We look at page 1. We look at page 1, which was an attendance. Page 2 was the opening. Honourable members, I raise with you now again, formally, point 3. Which was the catering matter, and to report to you formally that I have written to the manager expressing the dissatisfaction of the committee on that. Point 4 was the presentation by the department. Point 5 was our comments and resolution. There's no resolution really, more our comments, but the fact has got to use the normal template and put resolutions there as well. Then we adopted the minutes of our last meeting, and the announcement was just on the international study talk, and then our joint oversight to the West Coast. where we're requesting the staff to work on what I'm presenting, what I just presented to. Are we happy to move for adoption? Can I get honorable members? Thank you very much. Honorable members, we do not have committee meeting for next week. Am I right, Honorable Hush?
Yes.
So our next committee meeting is only going to be the last week in August. But you'll get time to notice. Do you have We just wanted to make sure that we alert you that our next meeting of this member. But the one on economic and business development,
yeah,
we're going to 29, and then trade in industry.
What about the
We have been toying around with the idea of doing a site visit, but our program don't allow us.
We're going to be productive. We're going to look at it. Probably could be in October. Our program for this term ends on the week before the 18th, from the 18th to the 29th, is the constituency period. The new term will start after the end of September. We will make sure that then in October we will bring it back.
Thank you very much.
I think you left before I was quite interested in the VA yesterday and then after
I was going to ask you, was he involved in this accident?
I think
he was with his committee. Was maybe involved? I didn't know. I don't know.